Hey, yo, and here we go. It's episode number 156 of We Talk Comics. Did any of you guys think we'd ever get it this far?
I
Absolutely
don't
not.
know. You practiced on the intro. Did you rehearse that?
No. Did any of you guys ever think we'd get it this far?
Probably not. Probably not.
I was surprised at five, so.
Yeah. I think we all were. Keith, do you ever think we'd get this far?
Absolutely.
You know, we are coming up on our 5-year anniversary here in a couple weeks.
That's pretty outrageous.
Yeah, that is pretty great.
I didn't think we'd make it that far. Like episodes, sure, but 5 years.
5 years. We're just a couple weeks away. And we had talked about doing something special for that show. And I think now we've decided we won't. So that makes it easy. Though we have some good hot discussion tonight, because this episode is called All Killer, No Filler. Because, Chris, you, there's Chris Breton. I'm Mo, by the way, and that's Chris Breton, Keith, over there.
Yo.
On the other side of the room.
Yeah. On the other side of the internet.
We're all in the same room.
That's right. Kayfabe, Brett. Kayfabe. All right. So over there on the other side of the room, Chris, well, you picked this week's topic. What is it?
Well, you have named it the No Killer or Killer No Filler.
All Killer No Filler. Brett named it that.
All right. This all stems from one little thing. The book I've been reading is Nailbiter, which I love. It's a depraved little gem, and I'm hoping you guys would enjoy it too. But it got me thinking about serial killers and how there seems to be, especially in the movies, this whole genre out there of serial killers almost as heroes, almost as protagonists. And I thought we'd just talk about that in the comic book form. Now, since we've announced this subject, I've actually done my research, and there isn't as much of this serial killer fiction out there as I originally thought. So hopefully we'll just talk about Nailbiter, and then I got to list a bunch of books we can talk about as well. But what did you guys think about this depraved little gem, as I've named it? I love this book, but feel no pressure. Throw me under the bus. Go ahead.
That's quite a build-up.
Mm-hmm. Who can start after that?
I think you can tell what we think about it from our enthusiasm jumping in.
who's going to start?
Keith, you start.
Go ahead.
How about I start? Thanks a lot for this, Chris. I really enjoyed this book.
Okay.
I plowed through the first 10 issues, first two trades, and have downloaded the third one from Hoopla. Quite addictive. It's like a Twin Peaks style, like small town, everyone's got a secret, layered story. I'm really digging it.
Yeah, I was surprised. We've actually run into this writer-artist before. Mike Henderson is the artist, and Joshua Williamson is the writer. He comes from the little group we used to champion and haven't really seen much from. They did Masks and Monsters over at Monkey Brain.
Oh, yeah, that's
which, let's face it, Monkey Brain, every book they ever had was awesome. I didn't dislike anyone, and they then graduated to this. And Joshua has done a couple DC books. So I would like to claim we found this guy, found these guys.
Discovered
any success this book garners is We Talk Comics, We Talk Comics discovery, because we pushed that Masks and Monsters, like issue episode 5 or something like that.
Yeah, well, and we can push that instead of this. That would be probably... you know, I read all three trades that are available on Hoopla, and the first trade I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was anything special, but I didn't mind it, and I was a little intrigued by the mystery. And the third trade, I'll just jump there because it starts off weak and it gets better towards the end. But that second trade is, I thought, one of the worst things I've ever read. Those first two issues, the one with that's just nothing happens. And then the second one with Brian Michael Bendis, which is just like a wank fest where nothing happens.
Oh, the Bendis issue is particularly bad. I did advise you guys to skip issue 7.
Well, yes, you did warn us.
You did. You said in advance, and you did not steer us wrong. That was awful.
It was so bad.
And it was so weird to take place in issue 7. What an odd, you know, like, decision to make. 7 issues into a series and be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get my buddy Brian Michael Bendis into this comic book, and I'm going to make me a shitty comic book.
Yeah, just it's a stunt. It's a stunt that just killed all momentum between that, the 6th issue also being no good, nothing forward going on it, and nothing that...
I actually thought that was actually setting things up for later. You are referring to the barn episode, correct?
Oh, I can't remember which one it was. It's centered mainly about the young lady, the 17-year-old high school girl. It's nothing happens. The characterization that you get from it about her, you already receive in other parts of the issues. There's nothing new revealed. Boring.
I think
and unnecessary.
We're going to get a call back eventually to that. That I think that was just set up.
I don't. I don't think so at all. It was just a filler. It was an absolute filler. Nothing happened in there that we haven't, that, like I say, wasn't established in other parts of the series. It didn't need to happen. It isn't. And between that and that Bendis, oh my God. And then it never got any good after that for that entire thing. And then it started off, the third one starts off weak and it gets a little better again. Like I said, I think I have a few issues with this series, I'm afraid. Part of it is that there's just really the one mystery to me. And it's like every time they're about to reveal the mystery, they just cut the scenes. And then you'll find out later the characters in the scenes kept talking and had the mystery revealed to them, but we never got to hear it. To me, that's not very good writing. This is not like Morning Glories, where there's a whole bunch of mysteries and you're getting a little piece here and a little piece here and a little piece here. To me, there's not a whole bunch of mysteries. It's just kind of the one, and it's just being prolonged far too long for me to maintain my interest.
Well, I think there's two. I mean, there's the thread of who is the new killer, and then there's the thread of why this town is the way it is.
I think that's the same one. I
think it's the same thing.
It's basically the same one. Yeah, they're so tied in together. It's not like it's going to end up being two things. It's going to end up being all working together. So
I also think there is a plot to involve our own protagonist that seems to be outside of everything involved in the town, but he certainly has a dark past that I think is going to play in somewhere to the rest of the story. So I count that as a third plot line.
No, it's just he's depressed. He killed somebody in torturing them. That's it.
It's alluded that there's more going on there. He's under investigation.
No, there isn't, Chris.
There's a whole thing with the FBI.
It's just trying to give them a backstory that they have no intention to play out. I'm sorry.
I read the issues, so I think I'm a little farther than the third trade, and the FBI gets more involved.
Well, yeah, I could see them getting more involved in the town, but like, that's not a mystery to me.
You know, it's just how long do you have to wait to get some level of fulfillment? I like, as I was reading this, I liken it to watching Prison Break, because, you know, at the end of the first season, they break out of prison. At the beginning of the second season, they have to break into prison. At the beginning of the third season, they have to break out of the prison they broke into. And the problem is, it's just like this loop constantly, because the goddamn show is called Prison Break. and you can't get away from that. And so that's what this reminds me of, is that constant, like, by the way, it's Nailbiter. It's not like the name of the city or the town, you know, kind of thing, but it's just Nailbiter. Oh, we got to go back to him. I don't know what he has to do with the story half the time, but...
Why is it called Nailbiter? Because the nail biter part has nothing to do with the actual mystery that they presented. It's just a characteristic of a character who's not even a lead character. It's just a character. So why call it that other than they thought that that was cool? It makes no sense. It doesn't describe the book. It's just something that one of the characters does in the book.
And it just cranks around to the same place again. Like, I'm willing to bet that if I read trade number one and then skipped right ahead to trade number three, I would be, like, not really, you know, have missed anything from trade number two. And I, actually, I'd be much happier because I wouldn't have read the Brian Michael Bendis issue. But
no, man, and this thing, that second trade, oh my God.
And I never actually saw it as a mystery, really. I mean, the mystery elements are there. But I always went into this book to read it like I was going to watch the Hostel movies, which I actually legitimately enjoy. It's a gross-out thing. I enjoy the Serial Killers and what serial killer where each one we're presented has this unique little quirk.
We'll get there, Chris. I'm not done.
They present this book, I mean, as you know, compare it to Twin Peaks on the, you know, the tagline on the back. And for anyone who was a fan of Twin Peaks, they wreck that show when they solve the mystery. Like, the mystery is the lens to tell the story about these different characters. I'm not really fixated on the mystery. I was more interested in who these people are and you know how they interact, as opposed to, you know, figuring out that, you know, what's the dealio with the caves or anything like that. That was kind of window dressing to me.
And maybe that's my problem, is that I didn't like the characters enough to want to read more about them. So I wanted to kind of get to the end of the mystery to at least give me some level of satisfaction. And after three trades, not only did I get no level of satisfaction, I basically didn't get any enjoyment in the characters for the part. So that's kind of the problem that I'm sitting at. You know, because I wanted to. I really, you know, after that first trade, I wanted to. I was hoping that it was going to go someplace a little bit different, and it didn't. And so, you know, by the third trade, though, I was pretty upset. You know,
And to go back to this, if it didn't, okay, they solved the mystery in Twin Peaks, but you know what? It's not that they solved the mystery; it's that they didn't have another mystery on top of that they could add in to take over, and that's it. I mean, this is, I'm fixating on the mystery. It's presented to me as, why is it this small town has all these serial killers? And then all the characters in this book behave in a way completely illogically so that the next scene can happen again. It's a scene where, like, okay, they take this serial killer and they handcuff him, and then they bring him down to the caves with them. And then he says, what you need to see is down there. So they just walk away and leave him. And then they're pissed off that the serial killer ran away from them and didn't wait for them. Like, it's stupid. It's stupid, shitty writing. It's a shitty book. The more I think about it, the more shit fucking. Like, and that's not that's only one of many times that this type of thing happens. The characters just do it. And you talk about the characters, and they all have quirks, but that's exactly it. They all have quirks because they come from the sound, and there's some mystery or curse or something, it seems. None of that is explained psychologically. Like, this is it. If you want to talk about a book about serial killers, you talk about really good serial killer books, and really good serial killer movies, or even television shows, you always talk about the psychology of what makes that serial killer and the guy trying to get inside their brain to figure it out. There's no psychology behind any of this. It's just like they think, hey, this would be cool if it was weird this way, and then they make them, and it's just perhaps the
what's the psychology then, yep, behind the killer who wants to try to see and how many clowns he can stick into a car.
Psychology behind it. It's not a serial killer book if there's no psychology. It's just a book with a bunch of weird characters.
See, I like that light touch, like just throwing stuff out there and throwing some of it away. Like, I mean, the whole clown car thing, that takes a page.
But it's significant. It's a part of a map of a bigger problem. You know what I mean?
It's definitely a symptom, absolutely, in my opinion, because the vast majority of the serial killers are stupid.
Yes, you know, and they're just throwaways.
It's people doing people serial killing for ridiculous reasons. I mean, not that I'm not suggesting that there's good reasons to be a serial killer, but these people are doing it for like, oh, you know, girl got to gets for every guy who catcalls her, she kills him. You know, trying to stick clowns into a clown car. How, you know, there's ridiculous serial killers that every single one of them seems ridiculous at this point. And to me, you know, that drives me nuts when I read it because it just, I'm not 100% sure if this is supposed to be funny or if it's supposed to be serious. And yes, it has its elements of humor, but you know, the one bonus that I will give it, my favorite part of this comic is the fact that I was able to read the third trade in less than half an hour.
And 3 minutes, I think.
And that was a positive.
And if we're going to, we were talking about Morning Glories. We were talking about Joe Eisenman trying to, who's going to be with us next week, kind of to respond to what we did. But we talked about how he's not a real detail oriented guy, but he understands the flow of the story and the storytelling. This artist, what was his name? Because he doesn't. Like, there's no detail. There's a point in this where, like, a little girl kills somebody, and a character yells, "No!" with the exact same expression she would have had on her face if she said, "I'll take two scoops, please." Like,
like, well, and then that's just basically, you know, swept under the rug from what I can see. It's like, oh my god, like a 6-year-old just stabbed some guy in the neck. Oh.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing wrong with it. That's a choice because that's indicating that she is, you know, she's as psychopathic as the other killers. Like, you just watched her commit her first murder. That's why she has no reaction. She's not supposed to.
I'm
talking about the cop who's sitting there yelling, "No!" No expression on her face. And everybody else has no expression. There's one expression for each character in the entire series. And no background work at all. I mean, none. Like, none. Like, none. Did I mention none?
There's cave paintings.
And the detail work on the actual gore is there. Those fingers being bitten are gross.
Well, but again, it's like,
how am I listening to you say?
It's like he paid enough attention to do the fingers because it's the nail biter, and the nail biter is the name of the comic book, and so everything like that is everything after that.
You wouldn't want to blow that part of it. I mean, that's fair.
Everything afterwards, skip that.
Here's the problem. Here's my main problem with it, Chris, is it should have been great. Like, everything you're saying about, like, that concept of the mystery is super intriguing. It's an extremely intriguing concept, but it's not fulfilled. And that's more frustrating for me than anything else when these things don't get fulfilled. And there was potential there. There was really cool ideas. And if they could present a reason why these characters are weird like that, and other than just that they come from this town, and delve into them. And there's so much, I feel like there's so much left on the table, and that's what's frustrating.
Okay. I don't say the only thing really left on the table is they had a chance to kill Bendis graphically and didn't.
Oh God. And that final panel with Bendis, damn, was that stupid. That final page or whatever. Like, and he comes across like a total douchebag, whether or not he wanted to. Like, this whole thing.
That issue.
Like, he comes across terribly. I'm like, I hope that's not what he's really like.
I will defend nothing in that issue. I've enjoyed the series. It is light. Like, I agree. Like, it reads incredibly fast. You know, I just plowed through the first 10 issues. I wish the Bendis one did not exist at all. Because I think it hurts the overall. Like, I know the idea of 6 to 10 was to do some, was to do a couple of standalones, expand the universe a little bit, and then get back into the
it's too early to do that. Though,
story. Because I don't agree. I think you need
completely killed the momentum of the story.
I think the Bendis issue can kill the momentum of the story. I think the other, I think the other issues, yeah. Like the one, like I think the other issues, like the one with the bus. And like the boss that's gonna the guy's gonna save everyone, I think that would have worked better without the stupid Bendis issue.
I agree with that, like, completely. You know, the Bendis issue taints your viewpoint for the rest of that trade.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And if you skip it, then you might at least come out of it and be like, okay, well, it's just stories of the nail biter world. You know, it doesn't have a lot to do per se, but it's just stories.
I stopped reading after the Bendis when I came back and, you know, enjoyed the rest of the stories.
There's so many times in this series though where somebody just coincidentally happens to show up at just the right time. Fuck, I hate that in a story.
It's a small town.
Please.
I want to make sure that we belabor how terrible the Bendis issue is. I really want to make sure we focus on that. I don't want to skip over that. I don't want anyone getting the impression that it wasn't really terrible.
I can't believe we talked about it this much. And nobody's mentioned.
That was the best art. That was the best art in the whole series. That was the best art in the whole series because he at least Bendis, at least when I looked at him, I went, oh, that's Brian Michael Bendis. Like, that's the only time.
That's fair.
What were you going to say, Chris?
I have never... I can't believe we haven't mentioned... What is a comic book writer doing investigating serial killers anyway?
Oh, he wants to make torso dudes.
We had this discussion off the show about... It was about the movie... what the hell was the Kevin Smith movie?
Tusk.
Where there was a podcast host who had a large research budget, and we were having some jabs back and forth. What's Brian Michael Bendis' travel budget for one of his creator own books?
He's just using some of his Marvel money too.
Yeah, right? I guess that's fair.
As he sits there creeping outside people's windows and doing acts that he should be arrested for. Yeah, it's great.
Well, things like that just bother me in comics. I like when another writer gets written in, it's either the funniest thing ever or it's the stupidest thing ever. Like, I will point to when Charles Soule has been written into a couple of books that I've read, and he was written in as the narrator in one book, which was actually really funny. But that's a different case than Brian Michael Bendis being written into this case.
Well, he's the star of the book.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There's a couple of those with with the Gaiman wrote, like, with himself as the main character, and they're so awkward.
Yes.
I love that Grant Morrison, when Grant Morrison got killed after writing himself in to the Animal Man book.
Yeah.
The Suicide Squad realized they could use the character because he wrote himself in it and killed him immediately.
Yeah. I don't know. That stuff is like how the sausage is made to me. Like it makes me aware of the mechanics of what's happening. Like I cannot get lost in the story because I'm so hyper aware that I'm reading a comic. And like, that whole issue was just constantly being aware of the nudge and wink that it's Brian Michael Bendis. Like if you had just made it a comic writer who, you know, was like an actual wink, like it's Michael Brian, Dembis or something, then
it's Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah, Jan Michael Vincent. then like I could have just moved on with the story. Like, oh hey, I get what they're doing there, and just gone on. But how much jeopardy did I think Brian Michael Bendis was in the story?
Not enough.
Not enough. You know, day one, I did tell you guys skip issue 7.
You did.
You did. Oh, yeah, but
totally nobody listened to
issue six. You didn't say skip issue six.
What?
Yeah,
what
nobody but you has the big, huge problems with issue six. It's seven that's
so
atrocious.
Boring. Well, that's atrocious. Yeah, don't get me wrong. But it never recovers from that. I don't feel like issue 8, 9, or 10 are any better. I really don't. I thought at that point the characters just started doing things, like I say, completely illogically. Just whatever they needed to do to make that scene happen instead of scenes that in any way tied together or that made any sense and behavior that was completely inconsistent. I mean, there's another point to say that there's the character, the cop character, who's like one of the lead characters, dates the nail-biter serial killer. And she talks about how she doesn't know how she missed it when they dated, that he was a serial killer. And then it shows scenes of them in high school where she's talking about how dark and disturbed he is. And, you know, and it's like it completely is inconsistent from what was written earlier. It sucks.
Oh, no. I think she knows more than that's going on. I don't think he's an actual serial killer. They haven't. He's out of jail.
Oh, that don't even get me fucking started. Now we're gonna go somewhere. Okay, so this thing opens up with this huge trial. It says when this killer came around, that's when everybody realized that there was a bunch of serial killers in the city. And then it shows clippings of earlier when everybody's around town from earlier serial killers, knowing that everybody's a serial killer. Again, completely what he wrote. Not followed up on, completely other story told in another section of the book, another section. But they open up this thing with this serial killer who's killed 40 people and he's the worst thing ever and blah, blah, blah. And then they say, and he gets off from his trial. No fucking explanation why or how. Nothing about tainted evidence. Nothing about the trial. Nothing. Just, hey, he gets off. And so now he's back in the town and, hey, the cops keep an eye on him. After all, he killed 40 people. It's so illogical. It's so stupid, and it's such a hole left. They just do it without explaining it. You can't do something that big and not explain it.
I think that explanation is coming.
Oh,
I don't think we're far enough in.
Oh, you can't do that. You can't wait that long to tell me. You can tell me if it's part of the mystery, sure. But as far as why the trial happens like that, you got to tie something together. Because you can't just say, because you can't, it's, nothing like that ever happens. Nobody who kills 40 people and has all this apparent evidence where they showed the cops walking in on him and everything like that just gets off scot-free with no explanation.
I think there's more. There has to be an explanation.
It's possible it's not the serial killer.
They just haven't shared it. There's a lot we don't know. There's a whole relationship between our investigator and his friend that goes missing at the beginning of... the storyline, there's a relationship there that is never quite
there
explored.
For him. Yeah, you're right. There's a relationship. Hey, I need you. Good. I was about to blow my brains up, but now somebody needs me. I'll come. Like,
no, I think there's backstory to all this that is going to dip into slowly.
Chris, I've seen it too many times where things, like I say, are written one way, and then when they need another scene, they say something completely different, and it retrocons the continuity that they tried to tell earlier. I've seen that like 5 times already in this book. I think you're giving them too much credit. I really do. Like, I know you like it, so I get that, but I just I understand, but I mean,
I have a question. Does anybody know if there's like an end goal on this, or is it just, you know,
my end goal was trade 3.
yes.
And I do not know the answer to that question. No.
Yeah. Because make no doubt, like at the end of trade 2, I made the comment to Mo that I wasn't sure that I could do it. Like I didn't know if I could carry on to read trade number 3. And then I just decided, because I was at work and it was at lunch, And I was more or less a captive audience, so I thought to myself, okay, this is fine. I'm going to start issue or trade number 3. And so, you know, I was able to get through it easily on that lunch hour. And then I was annoyed with myself because it was just like, ah, damn it. You know, you'd think that I could have learned from trade number 2 that I'm not that big a fan of the book, but I'm not that I went and read trade number 3. And so, you know, I got pissed off with myself for doing that more than anything.
Really, I blamed Chris. Like, No, but yeah. No, it's true. Like I say, it's possible he's not the serial killer that he says to be, except for that he keeps on talking about how he is. And there's all this stuff where he's like biting fingers and this and that. So it's again, it's like,
oh, I'm not claiming he's a healthy individual.
But
well, that's good.
Well,
he may have some dietary problems going on. I find it's a nice book to put my feet up and not think about, but
it's like they ignore all the big stuff because they don't know the answer to it, so they just don't bring it up instead of having an answer to it and building the story from there.
I think there's a semblance of a plan, and I think that's where we disagree.
Well, you think it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. And nor are you likely to.
Otherwise.
Are you likely, when trade number 4 goes up on Hoopla, are you going to go dig it in and be like, all right, Nailbiter trade 4 is up, I'm going to read it.
But like I say, that's the thing, right? Is that I sat there after the first one and went, it wasn't great, but I'm intrigued with the mystery. And then the second one happens and I'm pissed off. And then I'm like, well, the third one can't be worse. And it isn't. It's not as good as the first one, but it's a billion times better than number 2. But it's not like,
I think a couple bad issues, and I'm only conceding the one, really. So I put a bad taste in your mouth and you never recovered from it.
Well, no question about that. I never recovered because issue 6 sucked, 7 sucked, 8 sucked, 9 sucked, and 10 sucked. Then 11 sucked, 12 sucked. The 13 right. didn't suck so much.
I'm pretty ready to move on from this.
Yeah.
Talk about so are there other books starring Brian Michael Bendis that I can avoid?
Well, it's funny that you ask, actually, because I was wondering if any of you had read Torso.
Yeah.
Written by Brian Michael Bendis.
I have.
You know what? Brian Michael Bendis is one of my favorite books I've ever read by Brian Michael Bendis. No serial killers involved, but Power and Glory. Oh, it's great. Remember that one where it's about selling the script for Torso?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, that's a great book.
But see, that's totally different because it's Brian Bendis and Mark Andreyko, you know, that are basically the lead characters of the book. But it's written about them, you know, doing what it is they do, not, you know, like going out of their way to like hunt up serial killers.
Well, they're strangers in a strange town that is Hollywood. And so it's great. You know, it's great. But Torso, that was pretty good.
Were back in the days when Brian Bendis actually cared to write as opposed to whatever he actually does for Marvel. Now
he's just busy, star. Man. You can't write 70 good books a month. But you can write 70 books a month. That's the problem.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. Turns out you can write 70 bad books a month.
I just want to say this because I know we moved on. I wish I hadn't savaged this book that much because the entire series I wouldn't give it's just that I would give the second trade like a 1 out of 10, but I'd give the first a 6 and the third a 5. So overall, I'll give it a 4 out of 10, and not the worst thing I've ever read. Not good, but not the worst thing. But I mean, my level of savaging it was higher than my actual hatred for it. I do want to say that.
You could pretty safely just skip the second trade, though. Like if you're coming in, man. Yeah, just 1 and 3, just jump right over it. I like the other stories more, but they're all self-contained, so.
And make no doubt, no matter how much of a crazy person you are, because like, and this is my biggest problem, is that, you know, I look at it and there could be a filler issue, even in the middle, it doesn't matter what run it is. There's a filler issue. If I'm reading the whole run, it's kind of like, okay, I'll read the filler issue. And 99% of the time I come out of it and I'm like, damn it, gotta stop reading the filler issue. And so my advice to anyone out there who wants to read this is please do not read the filler issue.
Well, I think those
5 years from now,
fillers.
You're looking at your Comixology and you're like, why do I have 1 to 5 and then 11 up?
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
There is one issue none of us read, and I just want to hear if you guys think it's a good idea. There is a one special, Nailbiter meets Hack Slash.
I've never enjoyed Hack Slash in anything.
No, neither have I.
No.
That's why I didn't even mention it. But
appear with somebody else too? That because we read an issue with them.
Wasn't it Against the Evil Dead or something?
That was Army of Darkness. That's
right. Oh, and that was awful. That was horrific.
I tried Hack Slash another time because I'm like, this is everything I should love in a comic. But it isn't.
And yet it's bad.
Did you find any other serial killers in comics, Chris?
I did. Of course, the classic From Hell, which you know what I was thinking about? I know Keith has certain feelings about it, but the other two, I am unsure of what you guys actually feel about From Hell.
I want to know my feelings. I'm very curious.
I think from conversations we've had.
Can't you just tell me my feelings too while we're at it? Save a little time.
From conversations I've had, I believe just like me, you believe that it is a scholarly work that examines Jack the Ripper and is a very interesting piece, but on a whole, it's a big fuck ton phone book that really shouldn't be put up there with the classics. Am I correct, Keith?
I'll but the last thing, I do think it should be up in the classics. What I love about that book more than anything is that partway through hidden deep within all, like the 200 pages of notes, there's an admission by Moore that by halfway through the project, he didn't believe the theory either. But by that point, he's already committed that that's the story he's going to tell, is that Gull did it. And he's like, no, probably not. Like, I mean, it doesn't actually make any sense, but, you know, I'm here. What are you going to do?
And nobody should see the movie.
Well, I mean, the movie's its own thing. It's almost a second go at the source material as opposed to an adaptation of the graphic novel.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
And I'm betting Mo hasn't read it. Hey, you didn't read Cerebus. I thought you were scared of big, thick books.
Oh, I read Cerebus the first six volumes.
Oh, so. Cerebus is like 16 it's 16 From Hells.
Six. I read From Hell, and again it's much the same thing. Even earlier than he, and I remember reading that where he admits that he no longer thinks. I remember reading that because, and that made me feel a little better, because even earlier than that I'm going, this is not who I have my own theories on who Jack the Ripper was, and sure, this story is impossible. But And so that hurts it for me. As far as a craft, Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell did a wonderful job, but it didn't need to be that much book. It really didn't. It could have told that story in less.
I think it could have. I mean, it has that one brilliant issue. The best part of the entire book is the issue that is the tour of London's creepy and conspiracy places. Like the monoliths and all of that stuff. That's the best part of the whole thing. Like really that is the piece that makes all of it worth it to me, is it's kind of building to and then away from that one section of the book. It's funny. I never even, that one actually never even crossed my mind. It's a good one, Chris.
Okay. I got another one here and it's on the list because there is a comic book, but I think nobody really examines this. Dexter. On a whole, I enjoyed the television show, and the comic I didn't think was very good. But on a whole, I have some moral issues of portraying a serial killer in any fashion, in as if it was some sort of superpower. So I just thought I'd ask you guys about that.
Chris, as a superpower?
I think this, Brett, this sounds to me like this was right up your alley. Because you're a fan of that show.
Well, you know, here's the problem. Like, I'm a fan of the show for a couple of seasons, and much like reading the third trade of Nailbiter, finishing Dexter pissed me off as well.
God, I wish there was a better exit point on Dexter.
Yes,
I wish there was like a okay, and then you stop at season five, and you know, just leave it at that.
I wouldn't even go that far, actually. after John Lithgow leaves the show in season 3, I think you can end it there.
Yeah, whatever the Lithgow season is, but like,
yeah.
I mean, you need some closure after that. Like, it's not a clean ending, and there's not a clean ending from then on, unfortunately.
No, because the second that really, like, the second that Harrison is born,
yeah,
it starts to go downhill because kids destroy television shows.
They destroy any narrative because
yeah.
Finish your thought, Brett, because then I can rant about kids in the story.
Yeah, I don't think they always destroy the narrative. That's a little unfair.
Well, no, but 90% of the time I anticipate they do, because the problem is that the second that they come in is the second that you have to dedicate some level of storytelling to that character who is completely reliant on somebody. And so it's either stupid when they deal with them, because it's just like, oh fuck, I've got a serial killer now who's got to deal with his newborn, or B, I've got a serial killer who's going out serial killing, and it's just like, what the hell happened to the damn kid? I haven't seen him in like 40 minutes.
I'll go one step further, Brett. A baby on a TV show isn't a character; they're a prop.
Yeah, that's right. That's
absolutely they have no motivation. They have no character arc. They're for all intents and purposes, they're the same as, you know, if he had a cat and needed someone to check in on it. Like, there is no a child in a TV show adds nothing besides things for the character to overcome.
Yes, but that's because
that's not a character.
Yeah, and it's the same. It's not only the same with like newborns, but it's also like even like teenagers. Like, I remember starting to watch The Killing, the American version of The Killing, and the problem is that there's this teenager, nothing at all to do with the story, other than this prop to, you know, cause more, you know, problems for the lead character's life. That's it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I tried watching it put me off for the same reason. Mo, can you give an example of a child that's not like that?
That comes into the story.
It is totally different when they're already in the story.
I'm no good at characters' names, but there's that little girl in Game of Thrones who's like the head of that kingdom. It's a small kingdom that joins the Jon Snow and those people there, and she's awesome, and she like rallies everybody behind him, and she was great.
But she's not a baby.
Oh, okay. Well, no, didn't say baby. You said kid.
Of course. Okay.
She's like 8.
I mean babies. At that age, they can have character arcs.
But they need to have an arc. Yeah. Like, that was my problem with the character in The Killing. There was no arc.
Yeah.
And when you talk about a show like Game of Thrones, well, that's different because every character out there has some level of an arc, and it is an extraordinarily well fleshed out show. She's not thrown in just so that Jon Snow has issues.
Yeah.
And let's face it. I know this on television shows. And by the way, I'd like to get back on topic after this. But television shows, I know that the reason they have those, when a character has a baby, that episode is usually a season finale and huge ratings. Huge. And that's why it happens.
And then it kills the show. Brett having said that, I'm the biggest Dexter fan out of the group then, because I've read all the novels as well.
That's true. I have not. I tried.
Max Allen Collins or
Jeff Lindsay, which is a pen name. He's only written the Dexter books, and then he's got a new series that I haven't tried yet. But the books are quite a bit different than the TV show, and the comic is based on the books rather than the TV show, which also threw a lot of people off. It's not, I mean, the comics aren't great. They do tie into that continuity where he's married to Rita for the whole length of the novel series. The kids are very different. The kids in the novels are not the plot devices they were on the TV show. The kids in the novels are also monsters. There are serial killers in training. Now, other comics, Chris.
Oh, wait a second! Just one thing, because Chris brought up Torso, and I said it's all right. Chris, what did you think of Torso? And what about you two?
I haven't read it.
I enjoyed it.
Torso, I think, is a masterpiece, and the mere fact that it hasn't yet become a movie, I know they're moving on it yet again, is ridiculous. It's Elliot Ness solving the first serial killer rampage in the United States. How is that not a movie already? That should have been the Untouchable sequel, a prequel.
That's okay. That's it would have been the sequel because it's a Cleveland afterwards.
For some reason I thought it happened before, but doesn't matter.
No, it was after. But again, and it's based on number one, it's based on some semblance of reality. Like there's something about that where he definitely engaged with a killer. First serial killer? Fuck no, that's not even close. Not even close. But that's the tagline that they pronounce. But it's a pretty good book, but I wouldn't call it brilliant because the actual serial killer character is such a work of fiction that it's too much fiction. So it's not a brilliant piece, but it's okay piece of it's interesting enough. All right, that's my Chris. Other serial killers, I got a couple.
I'm gonna just throw this out on the kid thing. Piranha, those kids were wonderful. They got eaten up real good.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, actually, I'm throwing this right back to you, Mo. Green Wake. I know you love this book. Sell it to us.
Yeah, but I don't consider it a serial killer book at all, Chris.
Really?
Like, no, not in the least. That's not to me. That's not. It's this weird acid trip of a book, and it's got this great art and everything, but great writing and just this impending sense of doom. And it's a tremendous book, but not at all. I don't consider it. I don't view it as a serial killer book. I mean, it's a mystery, and it's more about the town and the people and everybody becoming frogs and all that crap. Like it's not about the serial killer. That to me is not the core of the crux of what makes it great. So I don't look at it that way.
Now, if Nailbiter, everybody turned into frogs,
that'd be awesome.
Then that would be totally different. And then, you know, and then also if somebody made a comment about a fish being in a percolator, then I'd be perfectly sold and ready to move on.
I started rewatching Twin Peaks.
let's
derail this again.
Yes, I am. It is a Twin Peaks getting type ready too.
Yeah, Green Wake has some Twin Peaks feel to it more than But again, when I think of a serial killer book, Chris, I'll give you one. Okay, what was it? Dark Knight, Haunted Night, or The Long Halloween? Sorry.
Okay, that's next on the list. Actually,
The Long Halloween. There. The Long Halloween is Batman chasing a serial killer holiday, you know, and he talks to the other serial killer, that's kind of the famous serial killer in his life, the Calendar Man, who I don't think I've ever seen outside of a prison. It's just Batman shows up to him and occasionally on different books and talks to him to find out about serial killers. But it's him chasing it, and it's pretty good. Like, that is a serial killer, kills people just one day a month on that hall, and there's a psychology behind it. Now, when the actual person who is Holiday is revealed, it's stupid and doesn't make any sense, and throws a whole ton of plot holes in. So it's like first 12 issues are great, and then issue 13 happens, and you go, I wasted a year on this son of a bitch. But that's a serial killer to me. That's a book that's about a serial killer because it's about a hero chasing a serial killer, solving the mystery and trying to understand the psychology of it. There's nothing else weird happening that's the pull. There's other subplots like the mafia and this and that, but there's no other, you know, pull.
All right. And we've talked about Hackslash, which serial killer is debatable. That's more of a Jason Freddy thing, but
that's not really
just killer. Just killer.
Trying off air to figure out the difference and a little bit on the episode last week. It's like, what is a serial killer? Because Chris had said, does the Joker count? And I was immediately thinking, well, no, the Joker's not a serial killer. And then Chris is like, well, let's open it up then to spree killers and mass murderers. And I'm like, well, then that's every fucking villain in the DC and Marvel.
me even mentioning the Joker there, that was probably a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, nobody's killed more. I think probably in the history of comics, the person who's killed the most has to be Thanos. And I don't consider him a serial killer, murderer. Like, I don't consider him any of these things.
Was aiming for that almost noir-esque Hannibal Lecter type killer. And got a little side railed there because the Joker, I mean, there's many versions of the Joker, and definitely if you read The Killing Joke, I'd almost call him a, because he's a mythology to him in that story. I'd actually call him a, if he continued like that for all his appearances, that would be a serial killer. But I think that that stretches things a little bit, but
does the Joker have downtime? Like that's, I looked it up. I looked up the definition of serial killer, and downtime is actually the defining factor. Like there is the psychological or psychosexual part, but that they kill and then wait and then kill again is actually the defining part.
Yeah, I mean,
as in a series, as opposed to
no. Even in The Killing Joke, I wouldn't say that about the Joker because his whole point is he's unpredictable.
Yeah.
But he does take little breaks to go back to Arkham to have a little rest.
That's not the same. That's not the same.
Yeah, that's like serial killers. Serial killers just go to prison so that they can be done with it for a little bit.
All right. Go ahead.
Scourge. Scourge would be a serial killer.
Yes.
Scourge of the Underworld, yeah.
There you go. I will totally...
See, once you have Scourge of the Underworld, you have to sort of include the Punisher.
No?
Different. Though me and Brett had that discussion.
Yeah, no downtime. And
and completely revenge-based.
Okay.
You know, he's just a guy who will go out and shoot all the bad guys.
Yeah, you got to... That's kind of your typical mass murderer stuff.
Yeah.
Sin Eater. There's Sin Eater as well.
That's the one I think of when era. I think of the death of Gene DeWolf. And
yeah,
like Sin Eater was a serial killer because it was a character who was killing specifically people from a trial that had done him wrong, right? So it's like, you know, members of the jury and prosecutor and judge and stuff. But definitely I thought that counts as a serial killer. But the character himself, the Sin Eater, is not interesting. It's not about him. It's about Gene DeWolf, right? So, I mean, it's like it's a great story, but it's not a great serial killer.
No, I was actually surprised how few books I could think of. Because in my head, because I watch this stuff on TV and in movies all the time, there's a plethora of true crime serial killer books out. There's a ton of fictionalized serial killer books. Why hasn't this translation been made into comic books?
How do you?
I know why. I know why it hasn't, because the problem is with this, as a general rule, with all of those serial killer elements, they're told and they end. You know, the problem with trying to maintain a series, just like we saw with Nailbiter, is the fact that the story is at three trades beyond, and it's not ending. So to me, that doesn't work because I want to see the serial killer arc. And I have to wait and read, you know, however many issues that Nailbiter is to read the serial killer arc. It's too damn long. You know, I want like, you know, 2 hours of my serial killer arc.
And unfortunately, they seem to be writing it in six issue arc, so the talent can go on to do other books.
And I tell you another reason why I think it doesn't work, Chris, is when you're doing your own property and you're pitching it, you're going to a publisher, just saying I have a serial killer story isn't enough of a hook. So those, I think, don't get picked up. I don't think those are what people are thinking of. I think you're looking for something higher concept. And then the problem is if you're telling a serial killer story in the superhero worlds, I mean, let's face it, the Flash or Green Lantern or the X-Men against a serial killer doesn't work. I mean, Daredevil, I guess you could say, the Punisher maybe Wolverine by himself, maybe, like Batman, obviously. But Superman versus a serial killer, it just doesn't work.
I would love to see a serial killer with a yellow power ring. I think that would be awesome.
There was like a short, it was only one issue, Toy Man.
I remember.
I mentioned this to Brett when we were. I saw Brett last week,
and we were talking.
I said, let's talk. Maybe we could talk about Toy Man, and then we could talk about how Maggie Sawyer's little child got killed, and bring the whole episode down.
Yeah, no, people were so pissed off. I would love to talk to. I don't remember who it was that did that. Was it Louise Simons?
Was it Byrne? Yeah, Byrne created Maggie Sawyer.
I thought it was after Death of Superman.
No, it's like second year of Superman. It was an Action Comics issue.
Well, people really hate the direction they took to Toy Man. Yeah, they turned him into this, like, yeah, like.
Oh yeah, he went from being funny to like just hardcore murder. You know? Yeah. No?
And he was killing children, but he thought he was doing them a favor, and it's like, and people hated it. And you know what? Superhero books, Superman has drama, yes, but also a sense of fun, right? Like, there's nothing fun about that.
Okay. I had one more book, but okay.
And I know for a fact we're not at an hour. We got to be. You're doing this now 43 minutes, Brett. You're every week you're pushing it forward.
Yeah, that's right. 43 minutes. The stopwatch that I started at the beginning of the episode. You're right. I just don't pay attention to it.
No, it's on fast. Hey, Chris, what do you got?
I got one more Bendis book. Has anyone here read Sam and Twitch?
No.
Okay, there is a wonderful serial killer art called The Writer. That Sam and Twitch hunt down. It happens in the Mark McFarlane verse, but if no one else has read it, I will say it is good and leave it at that.
I'm seeing a trend here, but can't we also say that Powers is also about a serial killer killing off superpower characters, and then the character that's solving it is used to have powers and now it's just a regular cop teamed with another regular cop. Isn't that also a serial killer story, I guess?
I think the comic book was less so. The television series, which is awful,
yes,
focused more on that. I always thought was more just about exploring this world, and sure, they have a serial killer sort of showing us around the world, but it's more of a world explorer.
Isn't that the first arc, though?
It is the first arc, but it's more of a guided tour of the Powers world.
Okay.
Then, who cares about...
There is a serial killer killing power people, right?
Yes.
Right?
But
yes,
I okay, can't... But it doesn't... I can't even remember the serial killer. He was
Why are you arguing against this when you brought it up, Chris?
Think Bendis is a little bit more diverse than just serial killer books.
Yes, he's serial killers and Marvel Comics deconstruction.
Okay.
Also, I want to leap in with that show.
What was Goldfish about?
Detectives.
Probably serial killers.
It was crime.
I'm gonna take back what I said earlier. Clearly, Bendis has put all of his time into researching serial killers.
Yes. And how about that was Goldfish? What about Jinx? What is Jinx? Isn't Jinx about serial killers?
No.
Yes, it is. Just say yes. Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
All right, come on. Let's wrap this up.
I don't think anyone dies in Goldfish or Jinx, so.
I don't care. I'm done talking about Brian Michael fucking Bendis.
Really, guys, I'm going home.
All right, so that's it. OUT on We Talk Comics. You can find us everywhere. Just look for us. Go ahead. Individually, as a group, whatever. We're all over the place. Joe Isma of Morning Glories next week to talk about, artists of Morning Glories talking about what we talked about on his book and respond to some of that. And Chris, you will not be here. You'll be replaced by Joe. So it's good chance this is permanent, guys. Anything else?
Let's ask him about fucking Brian Michael Bendis. That's what he